Hello and welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the week in music. My name is Charlie.
My name is Mark.
And this week on the podcast, we've got the long-awaited conversation on Arcade Fire's latest album, Everything Now. Certainly an album that Mark and I have been eagerly awaiting all year long. The date has finally arrived where we can break down this release. In addition to that, we'll also be discussing the latest high-charting song on the Billboard Hot 100. This week, we are going country, and Sam Hunt's Body Like a Back Road will be the topic of our discussion later on in the show. We'll talk a little bit about what else we listen to and call it a week here on Weekly Beats. Mark, we are in the throes of late summer. The days are getting shorter, the cicadas are buzzing at night, and our time is running out.
Oh no!
I mean that both metaphorically and literally.
That's a terrifying prospect. I hope with this, I actually join the cicadas in solidarity. I go out and I chirp with my strangely bent limbs.
Yeah, that's good. It's good to unite with nature in such a way so that when the nature being arises to reclaim all that is alive and dead, that you are aligned with the natural world and not the unnatural world.
Yeah. Let's do a little...
That's spot on cicada noises, I gotta say.
Thanks, man.
Really good. Have you been practicing?
Yeah, every day at dawn. Actually, the other day I was what's the word for when you're heckling. I was listening to the cicadas, and it was a very early in the day storm. It was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was out here making lunch, and I heard them because it was very dark out. Start to do their cicada thing, like it was the end of the day. And I started heckling them, yelling out the window, like, "You guys don't know anything. You guys are so bad
cicadas.
At this. Ever
it's
seen rain before, dummy?
Get a clock, huh? How about that? Have you thought of that? Getting a clock, cicadas?
Hey, cicadas, why don't you go down to the time store and buy yourself a watch? Because you guys don't even know where you are right now.
You got them.
Yeah, I got them.
Yeah. Anything else happening on your life, Mark? Are you getting through the day okay?
It's primarily just that, just yelling at cicadas and hanging out with them and joining them, thinking
about
them.
It's tough to play both sides of that coin. It's tough to be both a member and a critic of a crowd that you're trying to join, you know?
Yeah, that's why I have such trouble making friends.
Yeah, but I'm proud of you for
making those
strides. The cicadas accept me. Shall we just talk about this thing then? Shall we get into this album?
Yeah. Maybe I'll make a cicada noise. This means let's talk about everything
in
now.
Cicada.
In cicada.
Great. Oh, he's Thank still you. Gone. Okay, good. Let us dive in here. So you had spoiled your reaction on the last show by saying that this album was not very good. Mm-hmm. And I think your direct words were they tried to make an album that proved that they were not as good as ABBA.
That's really good. I'm so good at this.
So, needless to say, the critical reaction to this album in the weeks following its release have been mixed at best. Just running down some of the major outlets on the Wikipedia page here. AllMusic gave it a 3 out of 5. AV Club gave it a B. Consequence of Sound, that C+, one of the first reviews out. The Guardian had a 3 out of 5. New York Times had also a 3 out of 5. NME gave it a 5 out of 5. Pitchfork gave it a 5.6 out of 10. Pretty much amazing. A C, Rolling Stone a 4 out of 5, and Slant Magazine also a 4 out of 5. We are just about all over the place on this record. No one can decide if it's good or bad. I think it's important to set up here at the very beginning of the show, speaking for myself, I'm a huge Arcade Fire fan. I think that Reflector is one of the best albums of this decade, no question, and I think The Suburbs is right there alongside it. I think that they have been masters of combining just gorgeous, thoughtful instrumental pieces with some intriguing themes. I think that all of their albums are sort of concept albums in a loose sense. And I love the way they can change their sound with each record. You never know what you're going to get. And for all intents and purposes, the lead up to this album was only positive for me. The single Everything Now was one of my best tracks of the year so far. The idea of Arcade Fire exploring consumerism and constant attention from media outlets and other marketing institutions is interesting to me, and I think it's a smart place for them to put their sound and their social critique. And I liked a number of the singles coming out of this thing, and I was just about doing well, man. I was doing fine until halfway through this record, or right around track number 5 or so, and then suddenly it all just started to go horribly wrong. And this album is just, it is not very good, Mark. It is not very good.
I think, like, as far as the consensus goes, like, it's a lot of, like you said, pretty, like, it's okay being the reaction. And I get that instinct because, you know, there are so many moments on the album where you remember what makes Arcade Fire really great. But I think these aren't really well... I think even at its best, this album isn't extraordinary ever.
No.
And as someone who really likes Arcade Fire, but maybe has always had some issues to take a little bit with pretty much everything they've released, there's always been some moments that I'm just not able to fully latch on to or call like a perfect experience. I feel pretty comfortable saying this is not good.
Is it, like, we could say right off the bat, at least for me, this is their worst record so far.
Yes, easily, for sure.
That is, it's not even a contest. And I am not the biggest fan of Neon Bible, but I can think of several exuberant tunes and moments on that record that outshine even the best moments here.
Yeah, totally. No Cars Go is always one of my favorites from them.
Whenever yeah, Keep the Car Running.
Keep the Car Running is also very good.
Lots of good car songs on that record.
I think they love... well, actually, they hate cars. they have mixed feelings about cars, really, in between those two singles. I think something happened to Arcade Fire.
That's kind of the big question, right? Like, what happened? We're in an autopsy here. We've dug up the corpse of Arcade Fire and everything now, and the question remains, what happened to Arcade Fire? That's the big question I have after leaving this thing.
So I have a theory.
Okay, what's your theory?
I was discussing it with the Cicadas earlier. I think for their first three records, like, even if you're not heaping endless amounts of praise on them, I think you have to be acknowledging that they are an important band in their scene. Like, they really were a defining moment in indie rock. Funeral is a defining moment in indie rock. The Suburbs is another defining moment in indie rock. Even Neon Bible was a big moment. And the thing is, you always got the sense that they were sort of like heading where the puck was going, not where it already was, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I think you see a turning point on... Exactly, they're setting trends, and I think you see a turn in that happen during Reflector, where dance rock and dance punk had been a thing for a long time. Reclaiming 70s funk had already been pretty established in their scene, and they made a Reflector is personally my favorite Arcade Fire album, and they made an album that was within the trend where they weren't defining the trend, right? Like, they had James Murphy do the production on that, which obviously he made that trend happen, I think, more or less. And I think that's there's something to that, that, like, they got the guy who defined the thing that they were now going to take part in. And I think here, more than ever, they're behind it. Like, they finally had the full arc where they were really pulling everyone forward, and now they're kind of behind the trend, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment of this thing. I think also we've got to maybe look at this group's lyrics on this record.
Oh my God.
I think this is painful lyrically in places, really awful. And I don't know that Arcade Fire has been a band that I've gone to for lyrics. I think they certainly have their fair share of good ones, but they also have some just ludicrous ones. Like, I'm thinking, like, right off the bat with their first track on their first album, Neighborhood One Tunnels, where Win Butler cries out, "Then we tried to name our babies, but we forgot all the names we used to know." It's a ludicrous lyric, and the way he performs it is so over the top and just saccharine ridiculousness. It's a bit too much for me in places. And I get that people love Funeral and hold it up to be the modern monolith in indie rock albums. But there are moments like that that maybe take me out of the perfect world. I can't fully commit to those lyrics. But even on that album, I think he does commit to what's going on inside of it. There's an emotion inside of his delivery that maybe is what causes people to latch on to words, even if they are not as poetic or insightful as he would like them to be. And I feel like on this record, that emotion, whether intentionally meant to be a parody or ironic, is stripped away. That it's not there and it's not effective. And so in a lot of ways, I think it kind of lines up with Father John Misty's latest album from this year, Pure Comedy, where it's like both of those records seem like they are ideal topics of focus for these groups or those artists. And they kind of drop the ball with getting too big for their britches or trying to tackle too much stuff, whether it's everything or the entirety of human existence.
Yeah. And like, there, okay, I think in both cases, there is a degree of ego involved that is hard to look past. Like, we're already pretty used to Arcade Fire. I mean, with Father John Misty, that's front and center all the time. But for Arcade Fire, it's always felt like there was, like you said, that emotion that people really latch on to, which is what really imbues their kind of clumsy lyrics with a lot of meaning, even though they're clumsy. Is that they were always singing about something that felt like it mattered. Like, if they didn't sing that right then at that moment, if they weren't expressing themselves in that way, they would explode, is kind of how their music feels.
Especially Funeral
and The Suburbs. I think The Suburbs has a lot of moments like that too. I think even in Reflector, which is a more ironic album, that energy is still present. Reflector, it feels, even though they're being kind of more angry or cynical, they're still full of that energy. I think Everything Now is the equivalent of them speaking on things as if they know more than they do. Like, there is a arrogance to this album where there's certain lyrics in here, like he's mentioning that a girl came up to him and expressed to him that she was going to kill herself to his record, but then decided not to. And he's like, I think the implication being like, I thought I was saving lives. Turns out I almost helped assist to suicide. And like these huge emotional topics that he is giving none of his emotion or dedication to, just, I don't know, really don't do it for me. Really feel inauthentic, I guess.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up those lyrics, because I think that those lyrics on Creature Comfort are an important piece to this puzzle of Everything Now. And they are lyrics that I'm still trying to understand and figure out why they're here and what purpose they serve. So just real quick, we'll read the lyrics from Creature Comfort. It says, "Assisted suicide, she dreams about dying all the time. She told me she came so close, filled up the bathtub, and put on her first record." Now, in and of itself, I think that's actually a really powerful lyric. I think it's the first time that Arcade Fire has been openly autobiographical in their songs, in a way of like saying, we are Arcade Fire, and here's a lyric about us being Arcade Fire, you know, and here's a reference to Funeral. And the song, I think, revolves around life being painful and difficult and our modern needs to make it easier and more simple, right? And the chorus asks, "God, make me famous. If you can't, just make it painless." Later on, he says, "On and on, I don't know what I want. On and on, I don't know if I want it. Creature Comfort, make it painless. Bury me penniless and nameless." And so it's giving the sense that in our modern existence of splendor and excess, we still don't have the things we want. And my interpretation right now is that by not getting those things, we're driven to horrible, desperate acts like suicide. And I don't understand if Wynn Butler here is like bringing up that person's action or trying to put it down and dismiss it. It's an important lyric, and it's a very personal lyric to share that kind of story, and for it to take such an important role in a song like this. I don't know how I feel about the use of it. I've still got some questions as to how he is presenting that idea on the song.
Yeah, because consider too, like in during a song like No Cars Go, he explicitly names all of these groups of people that he wouldn't fit into, like, you know, women and children, let's go. And there's this idea that he's singing, the whole song is dedicated to like a kid who's dreaming of going somewhere far away from whatever trauma or pain he's experiencing. Like, and then that makes his urgency and his need to express in that moment have so much more strength because he's doing it for someone who can't fight for themselves. And in this moment, he's taking someone's pain, or what we're presuming is maybe something maybe really happened. Like maybe there's this is just a character or not. Either way, he's taking like a girl who was going through that much psychology, was having that much pain in her life that she was going to end it. She's going to put on her favorite album and die. And first of all, he's making that about him, which is weird. And then he puts her experience into the thesis that we're too much on the internet and we want too much all the time, which is such an unfair way to look at that. I guarantee you, no one who was that on the verge like that, none of those things are their concern. They're going through something far worse than he apparently has the capability to recognize. I think it's a bad moment that leaves me feeling uneasy, especially with his backup vocalist. I always forget her name. What's her name?
Regine something, I want to say.
Yeah, Regina Spektor. Every moment with Regina Spektor, this is the only time I love her as a vocalist. I think she brings a ton of weird energy to everything. In this, it is so off-putting to hear her just yelping in the background during this track that is about so much awful stuff, and to have her just being disco lady who's off-key is like not the vibe I'm trying to go for at that moment.
Yeah, it's Regine Chassagne.
Okay.
But yes, I agree that her voice is shrill and powerful in this song, and I've been critical of her role in this band in the past, and I think she was minimized in some ways Reflector. I think she was held back. And I do think that she has some good moments on this record, and I think that this moment here is meant to be ear piercing, and because there's like a chorus of her voices, it's not just one vocal track, it's a chorus of her voice, which makes it all the more oppressive.
Totally.
And I think that this is a song that as time has gone on, I've had more issues with because of that lyric, but I also think that the opening to the song, the instrumental work behind it, is really engaging and interesting, and I think just sonically is some of the most interesting stuff on the record. I want to play just the first few moments of Creature Comfort now. I think all that stuff is supremely awesome. And I think that when that song was released as a single, sampling a darker, more heavily electronic influenced record, again, my hopes only rose for this thing. I was expecting greatness and was disappointed by the overall product. But that sounds awesome to me.
I think there are some really smart moments in that song, too. I think there are some moments with that. You hear a touch of it in the clip you played, the rhythm guitar coming in with that chord, which is imbued with more and more depth as the song goes on. I feel like maybe
the bass work in here is really good too.
Yeah. Like there are strong moments, but even on this track, I think the writing is uneven. For as much as I like a riff like that, or I enjoy that they're using like 8-bit sort of style synth there.
Yeah.
I still feel like the vocals are kind of off. You know, I think Wynn Butler cannot pull off the James Murphy, like, I'm just being kind of cool and like barely singing. And he does some improv stuff in this album too, where he's like just stops singing and just kind of talks the lyric out. And that stuff sounds like garbage to me.
Yeah. Even on this one, he's still just kind of talking at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good, but it gets worse elsewhere. I think in the track "Good Goddamn," there's a few instances where he is insufferable to listen to.
Well, and this is maybe a good segue to go to this track too, because this is the one that brings back that bathtub lyric. And I think this song makes it all worse. So diving into some of these lyrics with "Good Goddamn."
Yeah.
You want to get messed up when the times are rough. Put your favorite record on, baby. Fill the bathtub up. You want to say goodbye to your oldest friends with a good goddamn.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to... He brings up a few other moments in the album or other like motifs from before in this track, right? It's not just that.
Yeah, it's possible. And that's something that Arcade Fire has done on previous records. You know, they're big on recursive lyrics taking on new meaning in different moments on the album. But here, you know, this is... It's a song that to me, just in interpreting, I could be wrong here, but it feels like it's imploring someone to suicide.
Yeah, it does feel weird.
It's maybe not, you know, imploring someone or at least glorifying it and saying there could be some good. Maybe there's some hope in this.
Yeah.
And man, what a nihilistic, awful thing to put on a record, especially if it's based on a real scenario with someone that did have this exact experience. Like, I don't understand what the message is. I don't understand what they could possibly be trying to get out of this thing to other folks. And the more I think about it, the more upset I get. I could be wrong. I would love to hear a defense of this, but I have a hard time enjoying any of the content on this thing when I consider the circumstances and the potential people involved in the song's creation.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is I feel like there's a way to say, to make that point with suicide that doesn't feel gross. You know, I can think of other bands who have used suicidal imagery, you know, especially punk bands, where it felt like it was for a purpose that they were using that. But because at least for me, because this album feels so self-gratifying, I mean, this is the second album for no reason. The second album that's about the information age and consumption that they've made. And this one feels that you can hear their age, right? Yeah. Like you can hear that they're older. And I almost feel like because the album has this sense of just like, yeah, whatever, like nothing really matters, that we're just like a fake corporation. That's the characters we're playing this time. Like, who cares? It just feels gross. It feels self-indulgent. Yeah. And saying that stuff, it gives it this sort of like lacerative edge that really, like you said, it's off-putting.
It just feels like the antithesis of the band. That it's like we're just going to embrace all of this like hateful stuff and be parodies of ourselves and nothing matters anymore. And that goes against so much of what makes this band important to so many people.
Yeah. You know, it really, talking to you about it now, I can't help but think about, this might sound like a joke, but in all seriousness, I can't help but think about how this was the exact career trajectory U2 went down. Where they were, you know, a huge band that were really young, they exploded really young, and they made their money on being really sincere and earnest and huge in their sound, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was all about the posy vibes, and then, you know, like, I feel like their career kind of matches up pretty similarly. Like, you know, you could maybe put War for Funeral and the Joshua Tree with the Suburbs. And then they made Achtung Baby, which was their weird dance rock, sarcastic, ironic album that's kind of like Reflector, and everyone was really into it. No one could believe what a transformation it was, kind of like with Arcade Fire. I think they found great success, and then U2 made Pop, and everyone was like, oh, this sucks now. Like, why are you guys you're just like pointlessly complaining? You're not really making a strong statement. I feel similarly about Pop that I do with this. It just feels like a misstep in a career that maybe will go on to have some more great stuff. Maybe they'll write their own Beautiful Day and we'll remember how good they were.
The comeback tour begins.
Exactly.
But I do think, you know, lyrically, Good Goddamn is also a great indicator of the lack of creativity in a lot of these lyrics, because there's so much repetition of these song titles in these songs. Over half the lyrics in this song are just maybe there's a good goddamn or some variation of that line. you know, over half.
Right.
And the same goes for other tracks like Chemistry and Infinite Content. And the middle of this record is unbelievable.
Disgusting.
It's unbelievable. It's so gross. How does a band that made such empowering, important albums put these songs together and think, yep, that's the ticket. That's the one. I don't understand how that works. Unless they thought these were just purely, you know, parody songs or meant to be kind of ironic and funny. But even that, it's like, why would you do that, though? Because that's not what people want. That's not what I want.
But, okay, who cares what people want if it's good? No one has ever... Okay, Peter Pan is like a travesty. Peter Pan is gross.
Yeah.
Peter Pan is is one of the most... maybe the most annoying song they've written. Like, it is like... from top to bottom, such an infuriating experience that is so repetitive. It has this awful flute motif that really, really grates. I listening to it, I was surprised. Like, I was like, I did like a double take in my own head where I was like, is this really what I'm listening to? Like, from Creatured Comfort, which I took so many issues with, but still saw the band in there, to Peter Pan. Like, what's happening?
This is when it all goes off the rails. This is when it all starts to be clear that this is not a great album. Let's play a little bit of Peter Pan.
Please do. Even that's bad.
Yeah, man. I'm all for discordant, weird stuff at the opening, and I could maybe get into that, but it doesn't sound great.
We're not even at the awful stuff yet. And that just having that sort of like synth that sounds a little bit like a fly buzzing past your ear, and then having like a reggae motif, which they are not capable of pulling off, or nor should they be. There is no reason for Arcade Fire to have that sort of like island, like rock tinge to their music. I Here Comes the Nighttime is very good, but it was very good because it's very inventive. Don't just start. Don't write this. Don't do it. Let alone what's about to happen in the track.
Lyrically, I think this is also a big low point on the record. The opening lines especially are awful. In my dreams, you're dying. It wakes me up. I can't stop crying. I just want to live forever. Keep my promises. Keep it together. In my dreams, you're living. Open your eyes and I wake up forgiven. Just a little something within the blood. How can I live with so much love?
Too much love.
That's straight from the Billboard, man. That's right off the Billboard charts. Or how about later on when he says, in my dreams we're kissing, it wakes me up when you've gone missing. It's an awful track.
Could this be a track about his artistic ability, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah.
Chemistry is also bad.
And I would say that Peter Pan might be the worst song in Arcade Fire's catalog if Chemistry didn't come right after it and challenge it for all it's worth. Chemistry is the Black Keys B-side that they performed and said, you know what, this isn't good enough for an album. We shouldn't put this on our record.
Totally. And they've done a lot of songs that are questionable.
They've done a lot of mediocre rock revival kind of tracks like this.
Yeah.
Let's play a little bit of Chemistry.
Please do.
That horn feature is so misguided, and the drum fill at the beginning is awful.
Yeah.
And I get the sense that maybe it was intended, but that doesn't mean it's funny or interesting at all.
Yeah, and on top of that, more lyrical content, when he's going in on this album, like, tell your boyfriend to throw the song on and then close your eyes and pretend he's me. Like, when did you become Young Thug? Like, what just happened? Yeah. Are you serious? Could you do me a favor, though, and actually play the guitar, the Joan Jett guitar riff that occurs in the chorus? Yeah.
It's very Joan Jett. Let's get to it. Derivative, uninspired, and it's Arcade Fire, man.
That's like, you would write that for an ad for Home Depot.
I don't even know if you would do that. I think someone would say God. That's a little bit too much on the nose.
I don't know, dude. That there is something so like AM radio about it. So generic, studio musician-esque. It's just listening to it is unbelievable. I can't believe it because there's other tracks on here that you can still, even Infinite Content, which follows this track, which I think is bad. I don't think it's a great song that they've written. It's still, you can still feel that Empty Room. The people who wrote Empty Room wrote Infinite Content, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you can still hear that there. So even though it's not great and it's got some misguided moments and it's way too repetitive without any of the strength of the other tracks, you still know they're there. A track like Chemistry might as well be written by a different band.
Yeah, it's atrocious. The worst lyric on the record is on this thing, in which he says, actually, I'm just going to keep playing it because I think it's right up next. Here we go. Okay. Go to the city, go to the store, ask for a loan from another bank.
Like, I think there's,
what does that
some...
mean? Who's he talking to?
This what? Girl that he's sleeping with.
Go to the city, go to the store, ask for a loan from another bank.
Yeah. You know what happened? He had written his assistant a letter saying, here's what you need to do for me today, and accidentally read it with the lyrics.
It's awful. It's truly awful. I never thought I would see the day when I would say that about an Arcade Fire song, and yet here we are.
I mean, I don't know if you kept up with their... They did a late night appearance recently on Colbert, actually.
Okay.
And as a joke, they had sent Stephen Colbert a list of demands for the band to play, and it was, I believe, satirical, because when Colbert posted it, he goes, look at these guys hot dogging it. Like, they think they're so huge, you know, which I don't think he would do for a guest, but it was just stuff like, make sure like only bottled water that's like from this certain mineral source, only have a sandwich that doesn't have cheese. If there's any cheese in the room, we won't play, like weird stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That was ridiculous, but not enough so that it truly felt like a satire.
Yeah.
And who needs in 2017,
who
you
needs
know,
more
there's
of that?
So much scary stuff happening. This is the, for you to choose to make this the thing you're going to parody. I had issue with that with Father John Misty when he spent
right.
months talking about how he was going to give voice to the resentment people had for current social and political events, and then wrote a track where he just, you know, reminds us that he took some philosophy classes as a grad student or whatever. Like, this is a useless satire. There is nothing that we need to hear right now. And even speaking in a larger sense, they're not good at this. They're not good at this parody. Other bands have done this exact thing before. This is useless.
Yeah. Including themselves, right?
Yeah.
And with Reflector.
They did this last album. Like, they did this.
And it was amazing.
It was great. Because there were still moments of genuine heart. Afterlife is something that when they sing it, they care about it. That's a song that meant everything to those people. They did an amazing performance with Greta Gerwig for the live music video, and that was incredible. Like, there was still that – they were angry, but they still were dreamy, you know?
Yeah.
This has none of that.
The last part of this middle sag, I think, is the back-to-back Infinite Content tracks with – are more or less the same lyrically. Infinite content, we're infinitely content, which for all intents and purposes is a Serge Tankian lyric that has been grafted onto Arcade Fire's music.
That's fair.
And they do it twice. The joke's so great, they told it twice, Mark.
Yep. Like that Post Malone lyric.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's at least... tracks on here that are serviceable. I think Put Your Money on Me is repetitive to a fault, but it's not aggressive the way other tracks are, and I don't have a hard time listening to it, you know. And there's certain strengths. I mean, I didn't necessarily feel as good about Everything Now as you did. I think the track overstays its welcome. It's a little
schmaltzy.
I don't think it's a little schmaltzy even for a disco track. Yeah. Signs of Life, I think, is just great. I think Signs of Life is a great track. There's good stuff here from a band that knows what they're doing, but it's unbelievable how much of it doesn't hit that.
Right. And my biggest problem, I just keep thinking more and more about my issues with the record, and how knowing that this is the same band that created those great things, does this record mar those other records? You know, like, so let's say, like, Put Your Money on Me, or even a track like Electric Blue, where you can get the sense of more experimentation and trying to play with the sound and do different stuff. But it's also repetitive and simplistic, and now I'm second-guessing other moments on other tracks. Like, is We Exist as powerful as I thought it was? Is this going to change the way I feel about that song now? And I'm mad because I love that record, and I don't want to have those kind of thoughts.
Mm. But then you remember that amazing sax solo and the David Bowie feature in Reflector, and then you feel better.
Yeah, it's all
because that was objectively amazing. That was great.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I think Put Your Money on Me is interesting, at least at the end here, when they get in some of the looping with the Put Your Money on Me. But again, that just general conceit is not one that's very clear here. It sounds like it's pulling a lot from The Suburbs, just thematically, I think. And then also the last track here, the last full track, I suppose, We Don't Deserve Love, I think is... Again, lyrically complicated, but musically interesting. Lord. And okay, fair enough.
I mean, it's all right. It's not the bad track, but it's a long...
Compared to what's come before, that glut of tracks through the middle.
Yes,
you know, like, to
sure.
get through all of those and then realize you have two tracks left and then the album's over is a huge disappointment.
Yeah, not to mention that by the time you get to the final track, the title track again, Everything Now... just like the very intro, sort of a reprise track. Finally, they play the chorus to Everything Now. It's this meant to be this big triumphant moment, and it lands like a wet fart. It does not have the power that they think it does.
Not at all, because it's supposed to be like, oh, and then we go back to the beginning and play it again. But there's no actual content on this thing that's worth revisiting again. I will never play this album back to back. There's a rare chance I may never play this album the whole way through again.
I would not like to revisit it, at least not for a long time. I don't really feel like there's much to excavate from it in terms of meaning.
Yeah, man, it's such a disappointment.
Which is how I feel about U2's Pop, which was, it's only interesting in the chronology of the band and where they were artistically. Like, there's as a statement, as an artistic work, there's just not a lot there. It's just coasting, you know, and this is that. It's gross, even.
Yeah.
On top of that, so.
I would say that Signs of Life is strong, but a big black mark against it in that Win Butler does rap The Days of the Week at one point.
Yeah, that's so true.
Which has only previously been done by Fergie of the Black Eyed Peas, and that was atrocious.
He doesn't say Saturday twice. He does not say Saturday twice.
The one positive is that he does say sometimes Sunday instead of Saturday, then Sunday. He doesn't name Saturday twice. So he gets the better of the two performances of The Days of the Week. But it is still a listing of The Days of the Week.
When that part happens, because I think the riff is really strong. It reminds me of, like, Sister Sledge, like, whenever they were, you know, because everyone knows We Are Family. But there's tracks like, you know, He Was the Greatest Dancer that are like, there's like a weird moodiness to the disco track that makes it so fascinating to hear. And I was like, oh, yeah. I'm so glad that they're tackling this. This feels like more comfortable territory for them. But then there's just still moments, even in my favorite track on this thing, where I'm like kind of laughing along. Like, I can't believe you're listing the Days of the Week. This is a Black Eyed Peas move, Wynn.
Yeah. I have a hard time believing there's going to be a record this year that disappoints me more than this one. I just can't imagine that anything... Well, you know, Queens of the Stone Age still has a record to put out later on this month, so that could
totally.
Maybe give it a run if it's not too hot. We'll see.
Honestly, dude, this year, there are plenty of records I like a whole lot, but from the bands that I love, I have felt a whole lot of disappointment.
Yeah, but this is one that acutely stings.
Yeah, I'm sorry for you. I'm sorry that you had to go through Creature Comfort.
I wanted to come out so positive on this thing. I wanted to say, like, you know what? I'm going to find the positives. I'm going to lift this record up. I'm going to let it shine. And turns out that's really hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think your map of them making a beautiful day is, I think, appropriate here. My question is, like, where do they go now? How do they... where do we go when the talent is gone? Where do we go?
Where do we go? Where does it go? I think that, again, the problem is they're going to find is that I think there is a demand right now for more prescient music. I don't think that's just me. I think there's just so many weird like articles like where's the music about right now?
Is this their effort at that more prescient music? Do they think that this is what that is?
Well, that's a good question. And this conversation might come up again because I finally listened to Man of the World by Bio.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But if that's true, what they've revealed is that they live in the bubble that their fans do not.
Yeah. It's a Katy Perry song.
Exactly. Katy Perry's Chain to the Rhythm is more prescient than anything on this record. And I believe that wholeheartedly.
Wow. Bold statement.
There's nothing that was said in this. Honestly, dude, I went into this last week when we talked about Lana Del Rey, but this 70s movement is awful. I could think of maybe two records that have been doing that. Let's just make a 70s album thing that did it well. And that is Saint Etienne made an album that's kind of late 60s. And Tennis, which made an album about the 70s. But Tennis, okay, here's the thing with Tennis that Arcade Fire has not done. Tennis made an album that feels exactly like it was from the 70s, that uses 70s imagery in its album art and its lyrics to make comments about sexism that are prescient today. And it makes them seem even more pressing that they made sense then and they still make sense now. What a great point that is artistically to make. This, having like, let's make a disco record about how all we do is sit around and, you know, mess around on our phones, is unnecessary. It's useless. And I don't know why everyone's doing this. This is the worst movement. All of these albums suck. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm confounded. I don't understand it either. That it's the year in music, 2017, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you have any final thoughts on this album here? I think it's nothing but a disappointment. There are good moments for sure, but the whole way through, I'm just continually reminded of how such a step down it is from their previous works.
Totally. The only album that keep in mind, I might not be as huge of an Arcade Fire fan as you, but I'm a massive James Murphy fan. I'm a massive DFA fan. I love dance punk. I the whole idea of it gets me going. The fact that they're making a disco record that's still kind of a rock album, I totally believe in them. I thought Reflector was amazing. I think they can do it. That's still a disappointment. Probably the only more viscerally disappointing album to come out this year was the Japan Droids record that came out and just totally had nothing to it. Or maybe the Young Thug album. I mean, this is like a most disappointing of the year contender for sure.
All right, with that, let's go to the highlight reel. Mark, what are you taking?
I'm going to keep it simple here. I was debating maybe taking what's that track I just mentioned here? I was debating maybe taking Put Your Money on Me because it's a highlight from a spot on the album that's quite terrible, but that's a lie. It's not really good enough for that. So I'm just going to take Everything Now, and I'll take Signs of Life too.
Okay. I think I'm taking two as well, but I'm going to swap out Signs of Life for Creature Comfort because that opening is just too good not to take.
I don't know. I think Signs of Life is more consistent, but whatever.
I would throw the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in your field and say that alone marks it.
But we're going to come to a standstill because all the stuff about talking about suicide in a bathtub and how good the music is
also very problematic. Yes, yeah. I agree completely.
We'll run into potholes no matter how we tackle that.
Everyone loses.
Yep.
Perfect. All right. That's Everything Now by Arcade Fire. You got it. You're one of the voices on that track. You're really good.
I actually did contribute. Full disclosure, I actually did the backup vocals.
You are actually Wynn Butler's wife.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You've kept that quiet for so long. I can't believe I never suspected.
I know. Even from you, from my friends. The only people who knew were the cicadas, and they've been very secretive about it.
It's like Bruce Wayne and Batman, man. It was right under our noses the whole time. We should have known.
Bruce Wayne and Batman, man? That's a man who's Batman?
Yeah. The Man-Bat Batman.
Oh, okay. Man, Batman, man.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will analyze and dissect the Hot 100 Country offering Body Like a Back Road by Sam Hunt. So stay tuned. Here we go. We gotta rock.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, sometimes Sunday. Love is hard, sex is easy. God in heaven, could you please me? You think you invented life? You find it hard to define, but you do it every time when you do it again.
All right, we are back and ready to dive into the latest offering from Sam Hunt, Body Like a Back Road. Mark, for the first time in 2017, we're getting back into the country music. Are you ready?
I'm genuinely really cursed. No, sorry.
What's in your mouth? What are you eating? Spit it out.
Yeah. Sorry. I was eating the cicadas. They're also my food as well as my friends.
I don't think it works that way.
Well, you don't understand our relationship, and that's okay.
Okay.
I'm really curious. I want to see where country music is at right now. I'm very open to see where this is going.
Okay, Mark, do you remember where it was last year?
We had a great moment with, what's his face? Chris Stapleton.
Okay, that's true. But do you remember, like, Dierks Bentley and Keith Urban and those guys?
No, I don't remember. No.
Okay, that's right where we are. We're right about there still.
Okay.
The good news, Mark, is that the song is 2 minutes and 45 seconds. So it's the shortest Billboard song we listened to yet.
That's great. Why aren't songs shorter more often?
I've been asking the same question for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
All right, are you ready for this thing?
Hopefully one of us will fall prey to Sam Hunt.
You got your boots on?
Yeah. It's cold outside.
All right. Let's go on the road. Here we go.
Got a girl from the south side. Got brazen hair. First time I seen her walk by, and I about fell off my chair. Had to get her number. It took me like 6 weeks. Now me and her go way back, like Cadillac seats.
God.
There's that first verse, man.
That was really bad right off the bat.
So we've got that crossover sensation, man. Definitely the production has made this thing less country than I think a lot of other country tunes, but also I think modern pop country is becoming more in line with this kind of sound regardless. So
yeah,
it's interesting. I don't know how I feel about that bloop 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 bloop. I don't know what instrument that is, but it sounds kind of fun.
Yeah.
A little bit of acoustic guitar sounds kind of like Party in the USA with a little bit of space in there, strumming the chords a little late.
I listening to that, all I could think of was like Yoplait,
the yogurt.
Yeah. I don't okay. know. I like to try to play this game where I figure out what song would fit which advertising campaign, and this seems like a Yoplait kind of song to me.
Okay. Lyrically, it says, got a girl from the south side, got braids in her hair. First time I seen her walk by, man, I about fell off my chair. Had to get her number. It took me like 6 weeks. Now me and her go way back like Cadillac seats.
Ugh.
I love the way he says it took me like 6 weeks.
That's 4 years less than the last girl with braids I talked to.
The annotation for that line reads, as Sam got to know the girl, they became closer. It took him about a month and a half until they traded phone numbers.
That is, okay, that's, of course, the genius annotation.
Yes. See what the people are saying about this thing. Help us make sense of the pop world.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just, I don't know what that was, but hearing it just was so clearly what I never wanted to hear before, so fast. There's no ambiguity to that.
Nope, don't expect a lot of it. The first line says, the annotation, Hanalei Fowler is Sam Hunt's fiance. They recently got engaged in Israel in late 2016. She was the reason that he named his first studio album Montevallo, a town where she's from, located in Alabama.
Okay.
The annotation for the next line, he is lovestruck. He saw a beautiful girl walk by, and he is so in awe that he is about to fall off his chair.
Like he's like doing the like Auga Looney Tunes thing. Mm-hmm. It was like his tongue hanging out.
And the final line, they've known each other for a long time, hence the phrase go way back. Those words can also mean to recline, as in the seats in a caddy. There's likely another layer to this wordplay, though, as Hunt seemingly refers to making out in the back seat of a car.
Wow. He seems to do that.
Okay. New theory. Is Genius and the annotations on there, are they just instructions for aliens to help understand the human race?
I think that's a very good assessment of the way things are written. Hair is the thing that grows on top of the human head.
When encountering humans, I mean...
When a human man is attracted to a human woman, he is flung backwards by the force of his lust, falling off of his chair.
Literally.
Do you think that this song was, like, the way the song was written was he just wrote it instantly? Like, he just picked up his guitar and went, ding, 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 number, and just was done already?
I don't know that he wrote it.
Oh, really?
Looking it up right now.
Okay. While you do that, I'm going to look at the annotation for the song as a whole, okay?
Okay.
Body Like a Back Road is an uplifting ode to Sam Hunt's fiancée, Hannah Lee Fowler, who's been his on-and-off girlfriend since 2008. It was put together just after he got engaged with her in Israel. Hannah Lee previously inspired his debut album, Montevallo, as well as the apologetic song, Drinking Too Much. Sam said, and this is a quote, "I've been taking songwriting a little too serious lately. With this lighthearted song, I just wanted to do the opposite. The past songs I've written were less optimist than the ones I'm doing right now." And that's how it's written. That is not, I didn't say it wrong. I think he hasn't been taking songwriting a little too seriously. I think maybe this one could use a few more passes before it hits the home plate, you know?
In some other details, this song has stayed atop the Billboard Hot Country Songs for 26 consecutive weeks, which is the record for most weeks atop the chart.
Ever?
Ever.
You know, I find the country pop / rap thing really interesting and unsettling.
And awful?
Oh, well, sure.
That goes without saying.
Of course, but there's just something about it that feels like concessions to white people, you know?
What do you mean by that?
Like, I don't know. It's just like a black person, even you brought up that person, that artist before who had a wasn't it like he had a rap feature where the guy acknowledged Black Lives Matter or something and everyone freaked out?
Do you mean Accidental Racist?
Yeah, exactly. That amazing song, Accidental Racist.
If you forget the... or what's the one? What's the lyric? If you don't mind my gold chains, I'll forget the iron ones or something.
That's truly bad. Ebony and Ivory.
Horribly misguided. Yeah.
Clumsy and blunt, but I don't know.
This is the first single off his upcoming album. So you know he's got something brewing.
Oh no. Moonshine.
Yeah. Let's hear some more, huh? Let's get the chorus. Body like a back road, driving with my eyes closed. I know every curve like the back of my hand. Doing 15 and 30. I ain't in no hurry. I'ma take it slow, just as fast as I can. Why she fit in them blue jeans? She don't need no belt. But I can turn them inside out. Where do you want to start, Mark?
He's so proud that he could take off pants alone.
I don't need no help.
I could put them on, too.
I think we need to maybe start with the central conceit of the song, Body Like a Back Road. I'm still not convinced that isn't an insult.
It sounds
that
so
if you
mean.
Think of a back road, something like barely maintained, disheveled, rocky, full of hazards. And your body is just riddled with crevices and hidden caverns and treacherous conditions.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So this song is essentially, he likes touching his naked fiance, right?
Yeah. He likes getting jiggy with the lady.
But he also, the first thing, the way he expresses it is he is so surprised by her appearance that he falls down. And once we finally get a descriptor, it's that she has a body like a back road and he touches her with his eyes closed.
Okay, and to follow that up, the genius annotation first reads, Sam Hunt was referring to how her body is curved like a country road. He knows her body so well he can close his eyes and still know where he is going. Monkey face covering his eyes emoji.
That's very helpful.
A person responded to it saying, also, she is absolutely hideous, which is why he is only intimate with her while his eyes are closed. The first annotation has a -2 rating. The second annotation has a +6 rating.
But it's like hard not to come to that conclusion.
At least the when even the genius annotations are making fun of the song's lyrics, you know you've got a problem.
Did I ever tell you about the time I met my fiance Deborah? Well, I was sitting in a bar, as laid reclining back, and I caught just a brief glimpse of her grim visage, and it blew me right over.
Her ugliness propelled me from my seat.
I lay there stunned, ready to slay the beast, and instead fell in love in a Beauty and the Beast tale for the decades. I never look her in the eye when I am intimate with her. I flip her over and I close my eyes.
A second annotation in the back half of the chorus reads, possibly this is a sexual reference relating to how he's going to go as slow as he can to control himself, while also meaning he literally is going 15 miles per hour in a 30 miles per hour zone.
He's in no hurry. He's not rushing to get there.
I don't want to know what lies beneath.
Oh, my God. How did you not think about that choice? You should have taken songwriting more seriously, like he said he didn't.
And how about this next line in the verse? The way she fit in them blue jeans, she don't need no belt. I get that he's trying to, number one, be kind of cute and say that she's got, you know, a fullness to her. Yeah. And also belt is easy to rhyme with. But man, that line could be taken a couple of different ways.
Oh my God.
You know, my wife has not been looking so fly recently. She fits in those jeans without any belt. You know what I'm saying? Does not need a belt to hold up those pants.
On a side note, I can take them off all by myself.
I don't need help.
Oh my God, this is so perfect. Like, this is hilarious. Like, you couldn't more write a song that was an insult. Oh my God.
And what if we just put over top of it some, like, sugary sweet beep beep beep
beep. My ugly wife.
Oh, man. Okay, but then even beyond that, you mentioned, like, the country rap thing being atrocious.
Yeah.
Did you notice in the chorus that we got that Rack City beat, that, hey, 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 like, that club beat that is in every awful rap song from like 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I'll listen for it closer next time. I was a little like overwhelmed.
It's in there.
Okay.
It was super hot about 5 years ago, and now it's into the country scene. It finally made the crossover, so you know it's good.
So, doing 15 and a 30, like he's like, okay, he's really taking his time with it, right? But it seems bad.
One would assume, yeah.
Both for his horrible girlfriend, his monster, his awful beast that he's engaged to, and also for drivers. Drive a little faster. Hit the speed limit. I need to go places.
Yeah, I agree. Bad decision there. All right, we got to keep going on. We got to keep going.
I love this. It's like honey, so thick and so sweet. There ain't no curve.
body like a back road, driving with my eyes closed. I know every curve like the back of my hand, doing 15 and 30. I ain't in no hurry, I'ma take it slow, just as fast as I can.
Okay. Did you hear the haze?
I did. I totally did. But I also noticed really in a hurry to get to the chorus again. That verse was like maybe 8 seconds.
Yeah. It's a great chorus, right?
No.
Mark, this is a song of the summer, man. This is a song of the summer. What are you talking about?
Oh, man. I don't know. I feel like it's mean-spirited.
Imagine being as a woman. Like, I wrote this song about you. Just, you mean so much to me. And I want to sing about how awful you are.
Oh, great. What are some of the lyrics?
It's called Body Like a Back Road.
Okay. Like one that's very smooth, like a smooth back road?
Yeah. No. Bumpy. Like... curvy. Hot. Sweaty.
Oh, well, are you like taking in the sights maybe? Like you're it's a gorgeous. No. No.
I'm driving with my eyes closed because I know the road so well that I can drive it without looking at it. And it has nothing to do with my affection for you. I just prefer to drive these roads with my eyes closed.
Oh. Okay, well, is there maybe any more descriptor of me, or is it mainly you driving around stuff from
well,
there?
Well, you know, I did drop a hot line about how you don't need any belt to fit into your pants.
Oh, my God. It. Oh, man, that's so good. I didn't know that this was what was going to happen to me.
I think this one fits into the categories
of diss tracks.
Certainly, there's the traditional, not diss tracks, the checklist of country music. We've got dirt roads here. We've got probably a truck. We've got a lady in some blue jeans.
Right, right.
We still have yet to hear any mention of beer or other country music artists.
Yeah.
But I think it's still par for the course as far as cliches go.
Why are country musicians the worst lyricists? Like, this is incredible. Like, Different for Girls, I thought was the highlight. Different for Girls is so much better than this.
I feel like we've had this conversation. We just haven't had it in a while.
Yeah.
It comes down to their audience, I think, and not wanting to stray far from tradition. I mean, think about, like, this production. I think this is a sound that is current if the year is late 2011, early 2012. And that tendency is, like, you know, we're not going to stay up on the cutting edge of sound stuff, but here we are 5 years removed, and now it's okay for us to do that thing because it's become normalized.
Right. It reminds
me. So I think it's slow to change.
I agree, but you know what, though? I think it's getting worse because I don't think every year that I hear country music, you know, you listen in the 2000s, I think is when, you know, or better yet, listen in the 90s, and they start to become like, you know, country stars are kind of like male pop stars. It's all just who's the most attractive.
Yeah, Garth Brooks, man.
Exactly. Like, it's all marketing and image, you know? I don't think these people listen to the music thinking they just, it's easy to relate to, the people are pretty, and it's marketed really well, and that's all it is.
Yeah.
In the pop country kind of scene. And then I think in the 2000s, once 9/11 happened and that, you know, song about bombing people came out, you know, and the country turned very nationalistic, I think there is a total downward trend where the people who are fans of country music have less and less patience for dissenting ideas or even just musically. Like, I think that the demand for it to be, well, maybe that's not true because it's now more, they're adding in these little rap moments too. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
No, I think you're still onto something because I think that rap features have been going on for a while now. I don't think it's new to do that kind of thing on your pop song. So
totally.
The fact that they're getting them now just suggests that it's been around long enough that they could do it without offending anybody.
Yeah, and they always do it in such a way that's just like, we'll be very polite about it. Like, they never have, like, an artist on there who says something really intense or really meaningful. Like, that, you know, accidentally racist, well, he just talked about the fact that he's black and that there's some racists in the world. And that was enough. Like, just even the acknowledgement of racism was enough to make those people have a controversy about it. Like,
yeah, they got upset, man. They didn't like it. Not saying it's a good song, but, you know.
No, it's terrible. Yeah.
All right, well, let's find out some more about.
We're out here in the boondocks with the breeze and the birds. Tangled up in the tall grass with my lips on hers. On the highway to heaven at the south of a smile. Get there when we get there, every inch is a mile.
Another check on the country list out here in the boondocks. Check.
What is it with country people that they just like to talk about where they are?
Okay, well, currently we are out in the boondocks.
Yeah, like, what is that? Why would you ever write that? That's so stupid.
It's important to reassert directional constants.
I guess in this case he's just saying, like, we're outside and we're making love.
Yeah.
Although he does slide in one more fat joke. Every inch is a mile.
She's so fat.
Just one more.
Get there when we get there.
Get there when we get there. Oh boy. Oh, man. I've never been in love. Okay. Like, I'm in love right now.
Some more narrations on point here. Every inch is a mile is saying take your time to get to everything, because if you rush it, it could lead to bad things. Han also wants everyone to know it's okay to take it slow, because if not, then things could be too rushed.
Yeah.
-2 on the votes. But a response in the comments says, this is a reference to the poor education systems in the Royal South that prevented the narrator from learning the differences between distances. That's got a +4 rating.
That's amazing. Never before has genius been this good.
Sick burn, genius.
This is too good. This is, oh, is there a username for that person? Can we say their name on the internet and congratulate them on their good job?
That one goes to Tom Johnston.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Sounds like a pseudonym.
It sounds like he's Voldemort. Polite clap. Polite clap for Tom. This is a, you know, I'll say this, though. What a sensual song.
No. That line, on the way to heaven, headed south of her smile, has the annotation that reads, in either way, Sam is getting dirty with his girl. If south is downward of the girl's smile, things may get rated M.
Rated M. Rated R.
No, rated M for mature, Mark.
It's not a video game content warning.
Let's design the video game Body Like a Back Road right now. What are you doing in this game?
A large shadowy figure shuffles into view. A large shadowy figure shuffles into view. First of all, part of the objective of the game is to get over your awful judgmental sexism and keep
open
your eyes open.
Open your eyes.
The whole time you must mash the space bar to keep your eyes open.
Okay. So it's first person experience.
Yeah, it's first person.
Is it in VR? Can we do it in VR? It'd be nice if it was like a two-player co-op kind of thing, where one person was the unshapely beast.
Yeah.
And the other one was the protagonist of the song.
Like the Friday the 13th game.
Yeah, exactly. Let's press on. Eyes closed, I know every curve like the back of my hand. Going 15 and 30.
Slow, just as fast as
It's a country song you can play in the club with your girlfriends, Mark.
I hate that image.
Everyone's just singing along, having a great time.
You and I, we live in Amsterdam, Ohio, and we've seen our share. When we went to college, there was one bar in particular that where everyone would dance, but it still couldn't get past. It was trying to be a club, but it couldn't quite get past the fact that it was a very much like a country kind of bar.
Yeah.
And what I'm picturing
this song
is,
has been playing there nonstop since.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what I'm picturing, and I hate it.
I think the production on this is super gross.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend's so attractive, you can't keep your eyes open, huh? It's like a Freudian slip.
Yeah. Like, how did he get there? How did he get there and not realize what he was writing?
You know, I think that all of America is not even bothering to ask that question because this thing is crazy popular.
There's a lot of questions America hasn't been asking itself that it very much needs to be. And this is the top
of
the list.
But this is number one. Yeah, this is number one.
Oh, I don't know. All right, I love this. This is the most I've laughed in weeks. This is so amazing for
That's
me.
It's true. Let's finish it up. We got 15 seconds to go. I don't know what that was in the background as it ended, but it sounded like a siren.
Yeah.
In the comments, someone named Sam Choi 02 wrote, "My name is Sam. Proud to be named Sam." So there's that.
Round of applause for Sam. He did it. Oh my God. I have never before have the most amazing people come together.
They did it.
Oh God.
I gotta say though, the annotations on these genius pages recently have been far more humorous than previously. And not like they aren't ridiculous. They've always been ridiculous. That's why we read them. But man, they are grammatically inconsistent and just overt in their obviousness to a level that has previously been unattainable.
Yeah, no, this is a gold mine. It's a gold mine we found.
I'm so glad all we have to do now is listen to one song and not an entire album.
Oh, honestly, thank you. If you're going to be terrible, be
oh,
terrible this
thank
way.
Thank you.
I could listen to this every week. If there's another one of these every week, I'm going to start to pray for more country songs to come through because this was delightful.
I got to ask, are you taking it?
Oh, of course not. No, this is an awful trash song. I never want to hear it again. It's a very good...
You couldn't even take it as like a reminder of the good times we've had?
Well, that's why I got this podcast, buddy. It's going to be on the internet forever.
All right. Well, I will also pass on the tune then. It's just... just not great.
Oh my God, thank you.
All right, Mark, you mentioned you've been listening to Symbio, Man of the World. What'd you think?
Yeah, finally, got around to listening to it, which you had sort of given me some mess for, because I love
yeah,
that
I figured
first record.
You're such a huge fan of that first album, I figured it'd be on this new one, like, instantly.
Yeah, and I don't know why I wasn't, but finally I've listened to it, and I'm so close to where you're at with the album, honestly.
Just that, like, mix, like, I have no idea what to feel about this thing.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's, like, Bio, you know, being the bassist from Vampire Weekend, just now writing his own songs, like that first album, you know, it's very dancey and still has some genuine Vampire Weekend songs. And you get the sense that he is the George Harrison of Vampire Weekend, you know, like he's the one that you didn't realize was amazing until you really listen back and you're like, oh, like this is some really great stuff. This new album, A Man of the World, is honestly difficult to listen to in some spots, not because musically it's awful. I think musically it's somewhat generic with a few very clever ideas and some great baroque pop stuff in there. like Vin Mariani, the opening track. I think musically, that's a great. He wrote a great song that really mixes those two styles of electronic dance and Baroque pop. But
yeah,
I completely agree with you about the lyrics. It's like he's written a celebratory song about being afraid, but he hasn't actually bridged the gap between those two ideas. It feels discordant.
And I think it stems from a similar space as the Arcade Fire lyrics, right?
Yeah.
Where they're trying to tackle something modern by either being openly frank and honest about something or just too over the top explicit about it. And it comes across as, I don't know, wishy-washy or not scathing or I don't know what. But I feel like it belongs in kind of a similar spot as the lyrics on this track or this album and Father John Misty's.
You know, I think what's happening is the people who are saying that they're upset about this, about how the election turned out or the climate of the world. Like, you know, there's songs in Man of the World that are about Brexit and, you know, other pressing issues and Donald Trump. And you start to realize right away that he is in his own bubble. Like, you know, he is safe from all of the things he's afraid of. And rather than exposing that so that he can kind of tackle the issue or talk about something other than himself, just like in Dams of the West, I feel like it's kind of a self-serving statement he's making. You had brought up the track Dangereux Animal, where he's going into all these flaws that he has. First of all, terrible title, just French for no reason. That's so obnoxious, all capital letters. But there's just moments in the track where, you know, you had brought up before, he talks about how he's not a vegetarian. But there's other stuff in here when he's just acknowledging flaws, like, you know, he's like, oh, I leave lights on. And listening to that, and he's like, I'm meant to hear that and go, maybe relate to it and go, oh, I could be better too. Or maybe hear him and hear what he's saying is, I haven't been very good, I could be better. But that's not actually what he's saying. What he's saying is, I'm not very good at this and I'm not trying. You know, and I was actually mad. Like, I was pretty angry listening to the track, that I was listening to an artist whose essentially his statement was, I'm making the world a worse place and I'm not going to change that. It's egotistical and frustrating.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it's musically disgusting like Dams of the West was, a truly awful album, but
at least he's got a voice and can sing okay and has some creative ideas musically underneath it all.
Yeah, I mean, he does a lot of really goofy, over-the-top, like, you know, vocals that sound like he's trying to be Elvis or something. But, like, I like that, and I agree that when he's not talking about that stuff, it's good. But all that other stuff is dragged down because all I can think of is this is the guy who he sees all of these world issues and he's aware of them and chooses to do nothing and participate in none of the discourse. That's not good. You know, that's not a person who I want to listen to his music and really dig into what he has to say. I find it off-putting.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it's like,
it's a complicated album, man.
It's like not an admission of guilt. It's like a admission of like being an ass, not working to improve yourself.
Right. Did you end up liking some of the other tracks that I mentioned, like The Keys Under the Mat or Sensitive Guy?
Sensitive Guy, I find off-putting. I find Sensitive Guy to be, you brought up lyrically, it's terrible. And you're right when he's just talking about, sometimes I'm sensitive guy, I even cry. Like, it makes
even
it,
my tears cry.
It's so bad. And it honestly, it's like all this soft boy discourse that's happening right now was maybe sitting in my head a little bit as I listened to the song and started to find more and more reasons that I did not want to engage with him as an artist. But I did I like The Keys Under the Mat a lot. I like Vin Mariani, despite its flaws. But I think as a cultural statement, this is a flat work.
Yeah. It's a crazy year for this kind of stuff, man. I feel like we need this sort of discourse. There's a sense of urgency about releasing these kinds of thoughts, but man, people are struggling to find a way to make it real or to make it meaningful.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you listened, I made a playlist of all the songs I could think of that made commentary about the U.S. 2016 election or any politics from 2017, regardless of where they are. And It's funny listening to that because you start to – you listen to the Death Cab for Cutie song. Like a bunch of that compilation that was a protest compilation against Trump, the 30 Songs Till Election Day compilation.
Mm-hmm.
All of the artists who are white, such as Amy Mann and Death Cab for Cutie and Franz Ferdinand, they all write these sort of like pithy essays about how Donald Trump is not a good person. Or they write songs about how they're afraid. They didn't realize this was happening, like the modern baseball track. But it's all of the black artists like JPEG Mafia, and not in that compilation, but YG, his track FDT, that's where that stuff is happening. And these people promising to make these statements where they're more culturally relevant, I feel like reveals that they're actually not culturally relevant, that they're not actually in any danger.
Yeah.
And they're not aware of how much privilege they have, and they think they are.
Yeah. It's a complex issue, and I think it's something that we will maybe look back on further down the road and go back with a more critical eye, and I think be able to better analyze and understand what's happening.
Yeah.
We need some time and some distance away from this place, please.
I agree. I think there is a very good LP lyric in Run the Jewels 3 where he explicitly talks about his background. He explicitly says, I didn't grow up in the same background Killer Mike did, but I care about other people and I listen to what they have to say. It's pretty much the extent of what his message is there. And then Killer Mike is left to sort of take center stage. And I actually don't think many of these artists actually have ever had that experience for real. I think they've just been living in wealth and not actually engaging.
So all they need to do is just join a rap duo supergroup, become super popular, and change the game.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. I do not want to hear Father John Misty rap.
Or Benjamin Gibbard.
Oh, God. That's, well, no, those would be pretty much equally bad, probably.
Yeah. All right. So there's that. Anything else you listened to this week, Mark?
Yeah, I got, let's see, six other things here. Let me turn on my speaker.
Active as always on the listening, man. You're always busy.
Yeah, it's just like addicting, you know?
You just can't get enough.
It's got to get more. I listened to Prisoner by Ryan Adams.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the hottest albums of the year so far.
Yeah, critically, it was on a lot of top lists for 2017.
Is it worth seeking out?
You know, it's a really well-structured album. It's very, very well-written classic rock. I immediately understood why it was on these top lists, but I also maybe disagree with that assessment. I don't feel like Ryan Adams has essentially made a breakup album in the vein of someone like Tom Petty, and I'm not, or Ryan Adams, I guess he also does this. I don't really know him so well, but you know, it's pretty classic stuff. There's not a ton of new ideas or being inventive here, and some of the tracks are more or less filler. Like, I think there are visible filler tracks of this thing. So I'm going to play a quick clip of the first track on Prisoner, Do You Still Love Me, which I think is the strongest on the record.
Okay.
How's that
sound? It seems pretty powerful. It seems pretty heavy.
Yeah, and he's great. Like, moments like that, you just kind of want to sit along for the ride, right?
Nice, yeah.
Cool. But there's tracks on here that, to me, it's just like, this is a pretty familiar experience. Here's a track that doesn't need to exist. It's called To Be Without You. Any track that opens with that riff is like a signal to me that I can skip it. You know?
Yeah, I hear you.
But like, nah, 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 nah. And then here's what the rest of the track sounds like, more or less. It's so hard not to call. Thunder's in my bones out on the streets where I first saw you. You know?
Yep. I feel like I've heard it before.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, for me, maybe not a a album of the year contender, but I respect it. Like, there's on its bigger classic rock tracks, the structure of the music is so considered and like professional. Like, you get the sense that he's just been writing rock music for so long, he knows exactly what he's doing, that it's worth a listen.
Cool, nice. I gotta check it out.
Yeah, check it out, buddy. Listen to Tourist in This Town by Alison Crutchfield.
Okay.
She is, you know, Waxahachie.
Sure do.
I didn't realize this until after I listened to it, but Alison Crutchfield is her sister, is the lead.
Oh, no way.
Waxahachie. Yeah. Who is also in Waxahachie. This is her first solo album. It's I think a solid debut. There's some amazing singles on here. Like, there's a track called Dean's Room that is a great pop rock song. But it's also kind of a breakup album, and I think all of the moments on it are very true and very worth listening to. But I also think that she gets a little mired in wanting to say the things that happened or what she's feeling rather than thinking about what's best and how most easily to express to a listener her feelings, you know. There's just a lot of wordy moments that kind of brought it down, but I think it's a kind of an interesting record.
Cool.
Listen to Home Counties by Saint ATN, excuse me.
Okay.
Which is one more late 60s, early 70s revival album.
Nice. Another one.
Yeah. DJ Khaled actually is, he wrote all the songs.
No kidding.
Every single song he just... he screams out,
"We the best music."
So the aesthetic for this one, though, is actually amazing, because they have, Saint Etienne have gone to great lengths to recreate English AM radio.
Okay.
To the extent where they have like a various forms of DJs and what sound like ads and things that are so pitch perfect that despite it being a culture that I've never been at home with or an era I know a lot about, you listen to it and instantly it's evocative of that space. So
cool.
The album opens with a track called The Reunion. And tell me if you don't get what I mean when I say that.
Okay.
This is Radio 4. And now, The Reunion.
Like,
yep, that's it. Nailed it.
Yeah. Here's an actual glimpse of the music. This is, I think, the greatest track on the album. It's called Underneath the Apple Tree.
That sounds all right.
Yeah. I think the album suffers from some pretty... first of all, it's a double LP. And it's long. And they don't really do a lot to escalate the sound. Like, Saint Etienne is a pretty soft pop band. Like, they don't go for big sounds. And a lot of these songs demand a pretty big sound. Which can be an issue. But I do give them credit for... kind of like Tennis, there are tracks on here, such as What Kind of World, where you're getting the sense that the sort of social, cultural revolutions happening in the 60s, they're applying them to the problems of today. And there is some pretty stuff that's pretty easy to tie to Brexit anxiety in that track and other tracks. So not an amazing experience of an album, but the aesthetic is pitch perfect.
Yeah, spot on, you might say.
Yeah, really great. Oh my god, my accent's so bad.
That wasn't great.
Really,
that was not
great.
Really great. You said the song was Under the Apple Tree?
Yeah.
Did you mention that had a Victor and Tiny feature?
Oh, Victor and Tiny, the classic music duo. That's right. No, I didn't mention that. That comes later in the track.
Okay, yeah. I think that's really good stuff. Let's check that out.
Yeah, you should hear the song fully in context. I mean, once it becomes revealed why the apple tastes so good to them, once you hear the full thing.
Awesome.
Okay. three more albums. The next is Plural by a musician called Electric Guest, which is a sort of like chill wave electronic guy. This is a really great album, really consistent. And chill wave, I feel like, is at its best when it's just something you could throw on and then feel really cool about while it's on in the background. It's also kind of up-tempo, and it's not just sort of like a gloomy one of those. It's got some really fun, like sugary, almost like mall music aesthetic to it. Here's okay. A clip of Glorious Warrior. What do you think of that?
That's pretty good, man.
Yeah. I really ended up enjoying the album, and I highly recommend it.
Cool.
Two left. I listened to Beautiful Thugger Girls.
Ooh.
By Young
That
Thug.
Album, man.
Mm-hmm.
Is it better than the album cover?
It is exactly as good as the album cover.
Ooh. Disappoint.
I loved Young Thug's last album. Was it called Young Jeffrey, right?
I think so, yeah.
And
maybe just Jeffrey.
Yeah, probably just Jeffrey. I loved that. I thought it was inventive. I thought it was a reason for the form. It proved what trap music can do when someone is willing to use it for more than just simple rap beats and a lot of messy talking. Like it's a great experience. This album is one of my biggest disappointments of the year. It is consistently bad. The production is bad. It's all the same generic trap beats. Young Thug has flown off the rails lyrically, producing some of the worst lyrics that I have heard this year personally.
Can I have a taste?
Oh my god, I have exactly the right clip lined up for you to do that. So this is from a track called Do You Love Me? And it's embarrassing. Here we go. She can clean like Windex when she want to. She'll read a nigga text when she want to. No text up on your shirt, she never want to. How about that Benz cool? Fuck me, suck me, L-O-V-E. Smoking musty, I love me. La 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 love me. Fall deep in love, love, love with me. Baby girl, come suck me and fuck me. Drinking bubbly, wicked thuggish and rocky.
Oh god. Oh man.
Truly awful.
Man, that was a ride. That one I didn't expect it to go, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you know the album was originally supposed to be called EBBTG, which was an abbreviation for Easy Breezy Beautiful Thugger Girls?
Better. Beautiful Thugger Girls is bad, and I would like you to conceal how bad it is with an acronym.
Easy Breezy Beautiful Thugger Girls.
It's totally, it's thoughtless. And that track in particular, once I got there, I realized there is no reason to continue to take the album seriously. Like, it's that the whole time. It's childish. None of the more interesting, subversive stuff he had in the last album, where it felt like the kind of thing where you would want to think about what is he saying about Kanye West here. Like, there's none of that. It's all direct and ugly and kind of stupid-minded. So,
general consensus seems pretty strong on this thing.
I do not feel that way.
All right.
I feel that
I
this
won't check
is
it out.
A bad thing. There is a track on there I do like called On Fire, but even then it's more minimal. It's not as expansive as I expect Young Thug to be, so not for me. All right.
Okay.
Last album for me, as I finally got around to listening to One More Light by Linkin Park.
Oh.
I've never been a Linkin Park fan, and at the same time, I respect that they are a band that's been around for a long time, and you know the sort of mind behind the band having passed away in a really tragic way this year. I thought it would be of interest to hear his maybe final statement and see what kind of insights into his person you can get. And I'll say that there are a lot. I mean, it's kind of alarming on this album how many of the statements come around to "you can't save me," or the narrator seems to be talking to someone who's trying to get through to him, and he's apologizing that he's a bad person because it's impossible. I mean, there's some truly classic horrible depression like notes in this, where in real life this is what you're told to look out for when someone communicates to you. What they're saying is they're a dangerous spot, and it's crazy to hear, especially considering the final track on the album ends on a note that seems to suggest, but don't worry, there will be another day. And to know that there wasn't, you know, it's maybe a difficult album to listen to, I imagine, especially if you have been following the band.
Yeah. And you think that is there intentionally, and you're not just like retroactively reading into that?
You know, it might actually be helpful for me. I'm going to, just for the sake of the conversation, I'm going to actually bring up the lyrics, because there's stuff in here that it's so easy to jump to the conclusion that I find it hard to believe that this wasn't honestly a state of mind. Let's see here. Also, it's also difficult because it's not as if like I love the album either. And there's maybe an instinct when something tragic has happened to want to celebrate the life of the person. And I think that's worth it, but I for the record will say I think this album has some pretty odd choices for production, and the songwriting is pretty familiar to other Linkin Park stuff.
Okay.
Okay, here is a perfect example from the track Heavy. "Holding on, why is everything so heavy? Holding on, so much more than I can carry. I keep dragging around what's bringing me down. If I just let go, I'd be set free." Mm-hmm. Maybe a better example would come from the track Nobody Can Save Me.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's pretty direct. And it's heart-wrenching to think that people near him weren't able to help. "I'm dancing with my demons. I'm hanging off the edge. Storm clouds gather beneath me. Waves break above my head. Head-first hallucination. But nobody can save me now. I'm holding up a light. I'm chasing out the darkness inside because nobody can save me. Stared into this illusion for answers yet to come. I chose a false solution, but nobody proved me wrong." I don't know. Maybe I won't dig too much deeper into it.
Yeah, that's still, man, that's pretty heavy.
Yeah, there's a lot to dig into there, and even for someone like me, maybe, who's not a fan of Linkin Park, that's heart-wrenching, and I think there's something to learn from that. I think there's something to listening to this album and identifying some warning signs, honestly, like practically speaking. There's stuff in here that I think is, you know, worth thinking twice about if you know anybody in your life who's maybe had conversations with you like that.
Yeah, man. Wow.
That's it for me, by the way.
Okay. All right. I will mention the only album I really listened to this week was the next album from Manchester Orchestra, A Black Mile to the Surface, released this past week along with Arcade Fire's album. And so I've been going back and forth between those two things. And I would tell you, Mark, what I think about it, but I'm going to hold off on that because, you know what? We're going to talk about it next week on the show. It's my pick for next week.
Oh, bye. Hey, bye.
I've been a big fan of Manchester Orchestra for a while now, and they have always put out some solid albums, but they've always let me down. And their most recent album before this one really let me down. Mm-hmm. And I think that this album is a huge return to form, and it may just be their best album. So I think there's a lot of stuff worth talking about on this thing.
Okay. I always get them confused with Unknown Mortal Orchestra.
Yeah, they're similar orchestras. I think some members play in the other groups, you know, with the cellos and the timpani. Mm-hmm. But, you know, pretty flexible as far as touring goes.
Okay. You know they're scheduling down pretty well.
Yeah. You know them, I think, from Swiss Army Man, because the lead singer, Andy Hull, is responsible for the entire soundtrack to Swiss Army Man.
Great. I remember liking the music to Swiss Army Man.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about that next week on the show. The Billboard has also spoken and has decided that next week we will be talking about a little song called Attention by Charlie Puth or Puth.
By Charlie.
Charlie. Not. It's a cousin of mine, actually. Okay. Cousin Charlie.
By first name.
Right. We're dropping all the way down to number 7 because we talked about everything else.
Well, that's unfortunate that we can't just cover that song again. We can't just.
Because guess what? Despacito is hanging out at number 1 again.
Mm-hmm.
And Unforgettable is at number 3 this week.
Man, what are people doing?
They just can't deny that Sway Lee, man.
But, like, what are people doing?
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can come on next week and find out some more.
Okay.
I think that'll do it for this week on the show. Send us some love, show us some likes and some reviews. We sure do like and review all that stuff. So, much appreciated. Do your duty to your podcast, as always. You can find us on all the social media platforms. We're out there, so say hey and join us next week for a little conversation about Manchester Orchestra and also that guy on the Billboard who sang that song, as is tradition. Mark, anything else for the people?
You know, it's been a long time for me, but I think once I get back into it, we'll be where we were again.
I don't know what that means. Is that some cryptic message for someone?
I think it was pretty clear.
Okay. Well, until next time, play that outro music! First kiss tastes like cigarettes. Dead man walking, take your best. Once again, you lost your friends. Around and around again. Those cool kids stuck in the past. Apartments of cigarette ash. Where we going? Who did you ask? Those cool kids stuck in the past. In a world of cigarette ash. Where we going? Who did you ask? Who did you ask? Looking for signs of life. Looking for signs every night. But there's no signs of life. So we do it again. Sick. Looking for signs of life. Looking for signs of life. Looking for signs every night. But there's no signs of life. So we do it again. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.